Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
And I am happy to be here listening to the unchanged introduction.
Yes, precisely. Okay, so today we have a question from Bill Beck, so let's listen in.
Hi, my name is Bill Beck, and I'm from a small American Baptist church in Cuba, New York. My questions are on discipleship and leadership over that ministry. Is there an optimal ratio that you have found to be most effective in personal discipleship? In an intentional discipleship program, how many people would you place under a specific person, and how often should we expect to make a contact point with each one of our disciples? Do you utilize upstream accountability to help your team meet contact goals? Thank you for taking my questions.
Wow, that's actually a super good question. And one I think that, you know, you usually make me answer the questions. And so I think you should answer that. You wrote the book, Five Silver Bullets on Discipleship.
No silver bullets.
I mean, no silver bullets. Yeah, go for it. Let's talk about it.
Okay. Okay, you know what's really funny? So my next book comes out in February. And my daughter has been advocating that the title be No Gold Bullets. And she's like, please, please, may the next book be called No
That's
Gold
awesome.
Bullets.
That's awesome. Five Gold Bullets. I like that.
Oh, Ed. All right. Yes. So is there an optimal ratio for personal discipleship? Now, obviously, the question is, what is discipleship? And there are so many different forms and that this can happen. And one of the chapters in No Silver Bullets is the difference between or moving from form to function, right? And when you think about discipleship, depending on whether you were a part of the Navigators or Campus Crusade for Christ or InterVarsity in college, or maybe there are different methods that you were discipled in, I mean, that's all going to affect it, right? And depending on if you were in a house church or a Sunday school church or a small group church or adult Bible fellowship, I mean, you're going to have a different opinion on what the biblical norm should be as it relates to community, right? Because I've heard people reference the same one in other passages and say, see, that's why we need to do house church. And then other people reference it and be like, see, that's why we need to do small groups. And see, right? And they're using the same one in other passages to reference or to talk about the same thing. So that's why in the book I talk about, hey, instead of focusing so much on the form, why don't we move to function, right? And what is the biblical What is Jesus talking about as it relates to community? What does the church need to look like as it relates to community? And also, what are the natural ways that people connect? So if you think about that, I mean, Edward T. Hall is the first one that really brought about this theory, proxemics. Joseph Myers popularized it within the Christian world. It's this whole idea of public spaces, social spaces, personal spaces, and intimate spaces. So if you think about those four spaces, discipleship can happen in every single one of them, right? So you think of a public space, that's your weekend gathering. Well, there are some people who say you can't disciple via preaching. And you know what? If the only way that you're trying to disciple in your church is via preaching, yes, you're right. That is not a full and holistic way to do it when you look at the life of Jesus. Yet, preaching is a part of the discipleship process for your church. So discipleship and community happens in a public space. There is a sense of community and togetherness that you sense and you experience when you're worshiping with one another in your church. That's typically 100+ type of feel, but even if you're in a smaller context, there definitely is that inspirational sense of a large gathering. Well, discipleship also happens in a social space, which is 20 to 50 people, right? It's not the same as a 1-3 person group, but in a 20 to 50 person group, there's a lot of missional activity and energy that you can have to reach out into your community, to serve your neighbors. I mean, to serve your community with 50 people is very different than trying to serve with 2 people. And there's a sense of togetherness that is smaller than the public size, but that there's definitely this sense of togetherness that's a little, you're a little bit more tight-knit within a 50-person And there's a lot of momentum that you can be building there community-wise, but discipleship-wise, there's a lot of missional activity that you can be discipled in that size. And then you have the small group space, right? 8 to 12 people. And when you look at the 8 to 12 person size, you can share a lot more about yourself, right? You can't really do that in a group of 100. You can't really do that in a group of 20 to 50, but in a group of 8 to 12, you can connect with one another. You can learn more about the people in your small group than others if everyone's regular, right? And a lot of times in a group of 8 to 12, not everyone is regular. Yet it's a great space for discipleship to happen. And then I know it's been a little bit long-winded, but Bill, I think in what he is saying, he's referring more to this intimate space, which is a 1 to 3 person group, a triad, a D group, you know, what an accountability group. So when you look at that, obviously, because the size of the group is so small, the greatest you have the greatest potential for life transformation because you really are doing life on life. I mean, life with one another. You can't hide anything in a group of 1 to 3. Well, at least you shouldn't, or why are you in a group of 1 to 3 anyway, right? So you have that. So I would say the best environment really to go the deepest and to have the most amount of transparency is that group of 1 to 3. The only thing is you can't match make that as a church, right? So if you are in charge of groups in your church, you can't say, oh, hey, here are these 3 random people who all want to be discipled. Let's stick them in a group together. You know, they're going to, you know, I'm the matchmaker. I'm bringing them all together. They don't know each other. I don't even know if they're really going to get along with one another, but I mean, they all want to be discipled. So the 3 of them, you get together and you do this. See, that's not going to work. It's not going to work because you are in a group where you need to share your motivations behind your motivations. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So in intentional discipleship, you need to lead out through prayer. If you want to intentionally disciple a few other people, pray. Ask God to reveal those people to you. And I know that doesn't really sound like a method. And I think a lot of times we want the step 1, 2, 3 type of way of doing this. But honestly, God wants your people to be discipled even more than you do. So pray, ask him. Ask God to reveal those individuals to you and then listen, engage in conversation, be aware of what's happening around you, and God will lead you to those people. And when you bring those people together, I would say don't be in a group of more than 4 people in total, because then you have schedules to deal with, and then you're going to be, you know, moving more into the small group space, which is incredibly powerful, but it doesn't have as much transformative power as an intentional group would have. What do you think, Ed?
I would say that answer is fire. That's what I would think. This is why you wrote a book on this subject, and it's really good. I think ultimately we sort of have this sort of Jesus modeled approach that I don't think Jesus was trying to create approach. You know, the 3, you know, the 12, the 70 or the bigger group, whatever. And I would say that that's not, I mean, a lot of times sometimes we see things Jesus did and that wasn't intended to create a pattern, though I think that's a fine pattern. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have been more, you know, again, last church I pastored, I'm actually not in a ongoing small group right now. Don and I were just talking about that because we've been in some transition. I was, and then people moved away. So we got to get in another one. But when I am, typically, I remember last time I was doing this, I was discipling two men. In our community, I was in a small group, and so that's 15 people, let's say. And then I was in the church, and I guess for me, those seem like optimal environments. And so what the optimal environments I think are environments that people actually will do, and that's different from culture to culture. But I would say if he can get a couple people that some of his key leaders are discipling, and small groups are the primary place and method of discipling for most churches in the English speaking Western world where people would be listening to this. But again, heck, I'm open to whatever. And I think that's what you're saying. Wherever natural forming structures that help people to live life on life, iron sharpen iron, you know, grow one another, whenever there's that, I think it's okay.
Yeah. The worst thing that you can do as a church is to prescribe the intimate space, that 1 to 3, 1 to 4 person space as the only place. And to say, hey, you are not a part of our church unless you are in this type of group. You begin alienating so many people, and that's not the only place that discipleship can happen, right? It's one of the places, and for some people, that's going to be the most transformative, right? Personally, I think it is, but there are some people who may not be ready for that until another 2 years. So you actually can stunt their spiritual growth by saying that, hey, you can't really belong to this church unless you're a part of this, and they're just not ready for that. So
yeah.
Yeah. I would just say lead with prayer, move forward with all that. Cool. Thanks again. Yeah. Thanks again for listening in to the podcast. We appreciate you taking the time every single week to do that. It's crazy that we're already on episode 421. Wow. On the Five Leadership Questions podcast. We are also, I mean, really getting up to 400 as well. So be sure to check that out. That's one that I used to co-host. I'm still on a few more episodes in the next month or so. But since moving back up to Canada, I've pulled away from that, but I'm not pulling away from the New Churches podcast.
So what you got? So New Churches you're in for.
Yes.
Because it matters most. I like it.
Of course it does. And being honestly, Ed, me being back up here in Canada, the reason we moved into an established church, and people are probably like, what? You're an established church right now? Is because this church, Beulah, has planted 60 churches in its beginning. And the elders of the church wanted me to come up and to lead the church back toward multiplication. So that's why we're here, because we love planting, love multiplication. So that's why I wanted to keep on being a part of the New Churches podcast.
Well, we're excited to continue our partnership. And hoping that one day we can update that introduction. Look, I mean, you can say this. How about just add, this is Daniel M. in Canada with Ed Stetzer in the U.S. That's all I'm looking for. A little change.
Yeah, eh?
Change is good for your life.
All right. Thanks again.